The Avoisier TM that told Arago his amazingly correct diagnoses would be considered, but the statistics on the actual diagnoses and treatment would come first. The research problem to be considered eventually would be trying to identify the nature of the A. Dr. Fritz's TM intelligence. Was it a creative process, similar to a composer hearing the music he is about to create and score? Was it simply a form of articulating Arago TM's unconscious thoughts? Or was it a paranormal manifestation of a source of intelligence outside Arago TM's personal memory and experience, which he called Dr. Fritz? Arago TM's knowledgeable utilization of a broad spectrum of pharmaceutical drugs was another tough nut to crack. How was he able to achieve successes with irrational combinations of drugs for diseases that were not clinically responsive to these drugs? Arago had, for instance, brought about medically confirmed, 5-year cures of leukemia with readily available commercial drugs. Why couldn't TMT other doctors do the same thing? Even when they duplicated Arago TM's prescriptions, the drugs failed to work. What was the boundary line between the known and the unknown elements of Arago TM's practice? Was the prescription itself only part of the picture, with Arago TM's own proclivities a vitally necessary adjunct to the total effect? Even though Arago TM's surgery could be easily studied and photographed at close quarters, and the patient subjectively examined and tested before and afterward, how could these 177 unusual procedures and end results be accounted for? Further, how could Arago locate unseen, deep-seated lesions without diagnosis, x-rays, or examination beforehand? Even though his surgical procedure was readily observable, and pathological tests could confirm the condition, how could he get away with neglecting to tie off blood vessels or use sutures? Why wasn't TMT the post-operative bleeding? Why was there no apparent surgical shock? How could a patient walk out of a room, unassisted, immediately after major surgery? And how could Arago himself physically withstand the ardors of treating some 1,500 patients a week, without full assistance and without periodic rest periods? The American doctors would have their hands full even attempting to answer these and other questions. To back up the staff, other specialists joined the team. They included Cesar Yazigi, a professor of Portuguese on the staff at NIU, and his wife, Edward Hall, of New York, an experienced filmmaker, and Paul Jones, a still camera specialist. Medical records would be handled by Mrs. Edward Hall, and audio recording by John Lawrence, who would combine his advanced engineering and scientific background in the NASA space program with his wide studies of parapsychology throughout all of Brazil. The equipment to be brought to Brazil was complex and extensive. It would include an AgroTape recorder, with a recharger and mic, along with 5 Norelco cassette recorders. Other audio-visual equipment included a black and white film processing kit, 2 sun guns for battery-operated camera lighting, a 16mm Eclair camera with 3 400-foot magazines, 5 Instamatics, a spectro-exposure meter, an Automicronica 55mm f3.5 close-up lens, a 200mm f5.6 medical autonica lens, and X-ray copy attachments. Other cameras included a Nikon F, 55mm f1.2 photomic, a Honeywell Super 8 movie camera, a 35mm Pentax, a 35mm Canon, a Hasselblad 500, a Polaroid, a 16mm Bolex, an ISO Super 8, and a Fairchild Cinephonic 8. The medical equipment, of course, was far from slighted. 178. The team would be bringing a portable X-ray machine, a portable EKG, a portable egg, bacteriological slides, stains, and cultures, an X-ray viewing box, blood typing equipment, formalin jars for specimens, blood staining and white cell count equipment, and a microscope. Added to this were 5,000 printed medical history and examination forms for the patients and an equal number of forms for Arago. A special Minox microfilm camera and accessories were added to photograph the medical records. Everything was included to make the survey as comprehensive as possible. Most of the coordination for the expedition fell on Solveig Clark at EMS shoulders. Nearly all the members of the group took night courses in Portuguese at New York University, cramming in as much information on and practice in the language as they could in a limited time. Much attention was given to contingencies and exacting minutiae. One concern was what the reaction of the Brazilian legal and law enforcement agencies would be. Confirmation had already been obtained that Arrigo would fully cooperate with the scientific investigation. He had again assured the group that he would demonstrate his surgical technique in selected cases in his own clinic, and that he would guide the scientific team to former patients and doctors who had worked with him. He would also grant interviews about his ideas and the modus operandi of his healing art. In addition, he would assist in the inquiry as to the sources of his information. Further, he would reluctantly consider the idea of coming to the United States for a full investigation of his healing practice there. All the practical arrangements had been made. There were, of course, imponderables. The chief threat was the resentment of the official Brazilian Medical Society, still stung and sullen about what it felt was the laxity of the courts. This problem would somehow have to be met and solved as best as possible. There was an implicit slur in the very fact that foreign doctors were taking over a job that many felt the society should be doing. Some of its most prominent members felt that way. The most important factor was obvious. The United 179 States team should try to make itself inconspicuous. The mere mechanics and logistics of the research made it imperative that conditions in the clinic remain as normal as possible. This was going to be a difficult job with over a dozen North Americans descending on the small town of Congonhas do Campo. The presence of so many researchers and their equipment in the crowded clinic would be bound to present problems. One difficulty with any research work is that often the observer and his instruments disturb the observed, whether the subject is electrons or people. This would have to be circumvented. Another difficult condition arose from the fact that Arrigo was enjoined from doing major surgery as a condition of his release from jail. There was also the cultural shock for those of the researchers who had never been to Brazil before, who had not been exposed to the Cartesist philosophy or the widespread belief in spiritism throughout the country. Except for Pugh Harrich and John Lawrence, who had studied the subject, only a few of the group knew any details about psychic healing. Two reputable psychic healers, Dr. and Mrs. Ambrose Worrell, came up from Baltimore to address the researchers several times on their well-documented, cautiously practiced healing work that had accomplished much in the field. Worrell, a highly successful engineer in industry, devoted all his spare time to the art of healing, either by absent healing or touch, but not with surgery. Both he and his wife were a far cry from the spook and cook department that throws up so much static in this field that rational minds hesitate to explore it. By May 1968, the expedition was ready. A strategic decision was made to split the team up, to stagger both the dates and places of arrival so that the ubiquitous Brazilian press could be avoided. This strategy was of the utmost importance. Brazilian journalists can be so over-ebullient that their enthusiasm wipes out reason. Blazing headlines were the last thing the American group wanted. Nor did Arrigo. His interest was in scientifically redeeming himself 180, after the brutal punishment he had been through at the hands of the prosecutor and the state medical society. A sound and solid research program would help wipe away the stigma that had been forced on him. In spite of his lack of formal schooling, Arrigo was an intelligent and rational man. He was also a good politician. Some of the research group booked flights to Rio on Pan Am. Others came in on Varig Airlines to São Paulo. Still others came down on the flight to Brasilia, and changed airlines. Up to this point, the strategy worked well. No press was on hand, and the group quietly reassembled at Congonhas do Campo in the middle of May. To further avoid drawing attention, they rented a ranch outside Congonhas in an attempt to reduce the inevitable gossip in the town, which would attract journalists like the vultures in the river. In spite of attempts to keep things simple, the arrangements turned out to be elaborate. It was necessary to tap the outside poles for power, both for the X-ray machine and the floodlights that were needed for filming. There was no good vantage point for the camera to photograph Arago at work, and it was necessary to break through a hole in the wall that divided Arago ATM's workroom from another small, unused one. It took 2 full days to prepare and test the equipment, but it was a necessary step. The appearance of so many strangers in town and those who were not patients of Arago A drew a great deal of attention. Crowds gathered simply to watch the process of tapping into the power lines. It was not a good omen. Sooner or later the press would be bound to be attracted, and the glare of publicity would measurably reduce the effectiveness of the survey. Solveig Clark, as the coordinator of the project, remained cool and unruffled. She arranged the medical report forms, set up the routine of the process that would be followed, planned the flow of patients, and saw that each participant was supplied with exactly what he needed to do his job. Patients were to be divided into 3 groups. For the first group, they would screen out a small number of patients who had classical and clearly identifiable symptoms. 181. These would be determined by a thorough examination of Arago ATM's diagnosis and therapy. The second group would consist of those who had seen Arago prior to the arrival of the scientists. The effectiveness of Arago ATM's treatment of them would be measured in line with the diagnoses provided by the registered physicians who had referred these cases to Arago. The remaining patients would be taken from the other groups, where cooperation could be obtained from the referring physician for a long-term follow-up of Arago ATM's success or failure. In this way, it was hoped to determine whether Arago ATM's treatments were transient, palliative, or permanent. The surgical studies would be most intense, to determine the response of patients in the total absence of anesthesia. Patients would be examined before, during, and after surgery. They would be checked by electroencephalograph, electrocardiograph, and an instrument known as a finger plethysmograph, which measures changes in the volume of blood flowing through a single finger. Blood pressure and respiration rate would be charted. In this way, the presence or absence of the appropriate autonomic nervous system response to the surgery could be determined. Other tests would be applied to the surgical patients simultaneously. Their psychomotor performance and capability would be continuously analyzed during the operation with specific tests, such as recent and long-term memory tests, audio-visual response, and deep and superficial reflex changes. Immediately after an operation, the patient would be observed for possible amnesia. This observation could check whether or not some type of hypnosis had been unknowingly utilized by Arago. Films would be made of the surgery procedure, with oscillograph monitoring in real time during the operation. There were many other considerations. Every specimen of tissue removed from a patient would be subjected to gross and microscopic pathology studies. Arago ATM's unsterile instruments would be cultured before use to determine the bacteria counts on the surfaces before he used them. The 182 surface area of the patient ATM's body where the operation would be made would also be cultured, since Arago never used any preoperative precautions to sterilize. Careful study would be made of incisions, and how they were able to remain closed without sutures. Follow-up plans of the surgical patients were included. As the research procedure began, attention was first turned to the study of Arago himself. Was there anything about his physiological makeup that enabled him to accomplish what he did? Arago, with the body of a sumo wrestler, was an active man whose brute strength and earthiness belied his inner sensitivity. He was as puzzled about his powers as the doctors who examined him. There was little evidence of his spiritual and lofty qualities most of the time. He cooperated completely as the American medical staff wired him with the awkward and intricate egg electrodes. He seemed eager for any practical test of his ability. After a complete physical, the doctors could find no unusual powers or anomalies. He could not control his brain waves, his blood pressure, or his body temperature or any other physiological variables that have been described in some mortogenic processes, including the practice of yoga. The only thing discovered was that he had a slight heart condition that did not seem serious or threatening. Aside from that, he was normal and healthy. One interesting aspect came out of the questioning during Arrigo TMS examination. He revealed that he was never able to treat successfully any organic illness of his relatives, nor could he treat himself. For the beginning of the broad-scale research, a routine was set up where Dr. Puharich sat by Arrigo, an interpreter beside him. All the key staff had walkie-talkies for quick communication within the center itself. Solveig Clark sat with Altimiro, along with photographer Paul Jones, who made a microfilm record of both written and typed prescriptions. Later, package inserts of the pharmaceuticals would be gathered and filmed. Cameraman Ed Hall was posted in the newly made wall opening, opposite Arrigo TMS table in his little room. Anna 183. Hall would write up a medical history card for each patient. The other doctors were assigned to pre-treatment examination, post-treatment examination, and analysis of the medical records that many patients brought with them from their own doctors. John Lawrence handled the tape recording, stationed close to Arrigo, where he could try to analyze just what made Arrigo tick as far as the mysterious Dr. Fritz was concerned. Lawrence's TMS extensive studies in parapsychology excited in him an interest in how this particular, A-voice TM worked to motivate Arrigo. The others were concentrating on the observable, objective surgery, diagnosis, and treatment. Although Lawrence was a hard, tough, material scientist and researcher, in his work with RCA, NASA, and the armed forces, he was one of the few scientists who felt that material science was approaching a closed frontier, and that sooner or later it would have to cross over the threshold of metaphysics. In his successful career of many years, he had dealt with some of the leading scientists of the world. Much of his work with the space and military programs had involved advanced development of electronic sensors and photoelectric cells. His accomplishments in this field were many, varied, and widely recognized. John Lawrence had given Arrigo a great deal of thought, puzzling over the possible mechanics that might be involved in his healing success. Lawrence had been experimenting with the use of photoelectric cells to measure human auras beyond that of infrared, a field that the Russians were quite advanced in. Lawrence felt that to understand Arrigo, it would be necessary to join in the phenomenon as much as possible, just as some psychiatrists were doing with their schizophrenic patients. By participating in the fantasies and delusions of their patients, these psychiatrists had brought about marked improvement in some cases. Lawrence also felt that, with the human mind generally operating at less than 10% of its capacity, it was possible for anyone to extend his sensory perception beyond the normal limits, to a greater or lesser degree. His conviction was that it was possible to work in the non-material field in the same way as in the material field. 184. As he observed Arrigo at work from his close vantage point, he tried as much as possible to become part of the experiment. He studied Arrigo as he would an instrument that had a broad spectrum of sensors. Arrigo TMS sensors were obviously hooked in deeper than normal to an unknown reservoir. When Arrigo found something wrong with a patient, he sometimes seemed to absorb the ill radiations from him. This was evidenced, and had been seen in the past, by several cases when Arrigo appeared about to vomit, or actually did so. One man of about 45 approached Arrigo in his turn in line. Arrigo started to speak to him, then suddenly turned to his left and began to vomit. An enormous amount of bile gushed to the floor. An assistant came quickly over to clean it up. Arrigo immediately explained to the interpreter that this patient was not physically sick at all, but was possessed by evil spirits. Arrigo insisted that he had taken over the spirits, and in doing so, relieved them from the patient. Whatever the story was, the patient perked up immediately, thanked Arrigo fervently, and left the clinic. It was a startling, dramatic scene, but one that could not be analyzed in any rational way. But perhaps this was part of the picture, whether the case was physical or psychosomatic. Could Arrigo absorb the pathological radiations of a patient, and then create an input of additional energy that the patient was lacking? When the problem was beyond Arago's TMS own energy field, was he able to tap a computer-like energy field beyond himself, and impute it to the patient? Since all people are analogous to a complex series of sensors, the problem was to get them to function properly. Whether Dr. Fritz was a myth or a paranormal phenomenon, did he act as a computer feedback to make Arago's TMS work effective? With a problem as wildly speculative as Arago, the questions posed would have to be speculative, too. Arago seemed to transcend the normal, but Laurencier's TMS analysis was that he was merely an extension of normalcy. Arago's TMS work was, in effect, analogous to acupuncture, in that it worked in mysterious, uncharted ways. But it went 185, far beyond acupuncture. Because his surveys in parapsychology convinced him of the legitimacy of reputable mediums, Lawrence was willing to accept Arago as an extraordinary medium who acted as a middleman to forces beyond himself. Since a spirit guide as a TM were a common factor among all mediums, where the medium became a vessel for a personality of unknown dimensions, could Arago's TMS Dr. Fritz fit into this pattern? The medical team was of course concentrating on the technical, material side of the picture. Arago's TMS capacity for making accurate diagnoses without previous knowledge of the patient a TMS illness and without a physical examination was confirmed again as case after case was recorded and examined by the American doctors, before and after treatment by Arago. A paraplegic arrived in a wheelchair. Arago stated that at the age of 15, he had fractured his cervical spine, the result of a diving injury. This was confirmed in full detail. A woman stepped up to Arago. After a quick glance at her, Arago told the Americans that they would find her blood pressure to be 230 systolic and 140 diastolic. The cuff and Tycho's instrument readings showed exactly that. A man was next in line. He showed symptoms of congestive heart failure with dyspnea, and a distended external jugular vein. Arago immediately said to the researchers, "Ah, this man has renal hypertension with a systolic pressure of 288 mm." The post-Arago examination by the American doctors and the history supplied by the man's TMS own physician confirmed that reading and condition. The next man spilled out his story to Arago. He said he had Chaga TMS disease, a common parasitic disease in Brazil. Arago glared at him, then turned to the Americans. "Ah no, ATM," he said. "Ah, this man has a 4+ Wasserman, and the diagnosis is syphilis, not Chaga TMS disease ATM." This was confirmed both by the patient's TMS medical records and a later Wasserman test. It seemed difficult to mislead Arago. What was noteworthy was the exactitude of Arago's TMS diagnosis. A patient would step up to the table where Arago sat. To the American doctors, and even to the layman, it might be obvious that there was something wrong 186, with the patient at TMS eyes. But Arago would not merely say that the patient had eye trouble. He would say that the patient had retinoblastoma, or retinitis pigmentosa, or use other modern medical terminology. He would invariably be proved correct by the technical follow-up by the American doctors. The checking of Arago's TMS diagnostic ability continued. The statistics matched Dr. Puharich's TMS preliminary survey, and continued to hold up as the assembly line pumped by Arago at the rate of one patient a minute. Paul Jones, the still photographer, came over to the table to ask Dr. Puharich a question. Arago stopped him by the arm and said, "You are taking entirely too much medicine." ATM, the Americans laughed, because they knew Jones carried an overabundance of medicine with him. Like nearly everyone who saw Arago, Dr. Punk, the psychiatrist from Maryland, was interested in the threshold of pain when Arago performed his seemingly brutal eye examinations. Hardly anyone seemed to be bothered by them, no one reported any pain. Out of dozens of these knife-in-the-eye examinations, two of the patients did show some sign of fear. It was on a day that Arago himself seemed out of sorts. He had scolded the crowd waiting for him when he entered, saying that he would not tolerate anyone in the center who made noise or disturbed his work. He said he wanted to help all those who needed it, but that those who came merely to watch were not welcome. He said he knew that some of the people there had been drinking, and that they ought to return to their bars. He added, I am not a saint, I am unclean and uneducated. I never called anybody here, and I won't attempt to put up with this drinking. Anybody who has been doing this, get out. Then he told the people to get in line and Dr. Fritz would take care of them. As they filed by, he often cupped his ear with his hand, explaining that he was having trouble hearing what Dr. Fritz had to say that day. Several times, he was heard to mutter, I am very nervous today. Very nervous. And so is Heaven atm. In spite of Arrigo atm's occasional mercurial moods, the filming went well, making sure there were no reporters or 187 police around. Arrigo performed several operations for the motion picture camera. One difficulty was that the lights bothered the patients, and had to be reduced in order to make them feel more comfortable. This brought a corresponding reduction in the quality of the film. He did not perform any major operations for the camera, but did operate on a full spectrum of cataracts, lipomas, sebaceous cysts, a gigantic hydrocele, iprobes, and others. The legal situation was still hanging fire, and Arrigo was obviously worried about it. Fortunately, up to this point, the press was not in the picture. When the press did arrive, it hit like a tidal wave. It had been impossible to keep the survey confidential, of course, but none of the American team quite expected what was to happen when the flood of reporters stormed into the town, including radio, television, and print media. All the meticulous, expensive planning of the research group was threatened disastrously. If there was one thing the American doctors did not attempt to want, it was publicity. Nor did Arrigo, nor did the patients. As the reporters and TV crews grew to over 40, the entire research project began sliding precariously to a halt. 188:10. The moment the press arrived, conditions for a scientific study became almost untenable. Everywhere anyone turned, a reporter or cameraman was on hand to squeeze out information on this first major medical study of Arrigo. Headlines about Arrigo and the North Americans blazed all over Brazil. The American doctors, interested only in serious medical research, simply could not and would not continue the project under such carnival conditions. Arrigo pleaded with the journalists to refrain from the coverage, but to no avail. Puharich called a hurried press conference with the reporters. He explained how publicity at this point would be ruinous not only to the expedition, but to Arrigo. Many patients wanted to remain anonymous, but their pictures were being plastered on front pages across the country. Because none of the American doctors wanted anything but medical journal exposure later, Puharich would not supply the press with any information on the identity of the group or on the methods employed. All the conference resulted in was the resentment of the reporters, who labeled the expedition as the mysterious North Americans atm, and continued to badger the patients for any information they could get from them. Arrigo refused, of course, to do any further operations with the media men around. The patients, not knowing whether an interviewer was a reporter or a doctor, balked at talking to either. In a strange turnabout, the Medical Society of Minas Gerais issued a statement that the North American doctors were engaging in a purely parapsychological investigation, that this was praiseworthy, and that its own doctors should continue the work after the Americans had left. This radical change in the outlook of the organization brought protests from some of its members, but it seemed as if the tide had at last turned. Two Brazilian members of the society, in fact, arrived to observe the American researchers, along with H.V. Walter, the 189 British consul, whose interest in gaining a rational explanation of Arrigo never flagged. The newspaper story that brought events to a crisis was one appearing on May 27, 1968, in O Dia, a widely circulated paper in Brazil. The headline to the story was, "American planning to take the medium to United States, public uproar against it." The story went on to say that the town of Congonhas do Campo was in an uproar with the news that Arago might accept the invitation of the North Americans to go to the States for specialized research. A large crowd gathered at the Spirit Center, and Arago was forced to come out and address them. He assured the gathering that he had no intention of leaving Congonhas, that he would stay with his people and continue his work.